Yeah, Jerry, if you got the evidence for a person being a murderer,
exactly.
You can convict that dude from being a murderer.
Thank you.
Now, the evidence is right there in your face.
Right.
What the fuck is you on me for? Because this is what he felt. He felt like I'm supplying a whole bunch of dope and shit over there and trying to make the blood card strong. That was his big thing right there.
Here we are in Ojai at the Deer Lodge. Guys, I can't tell you how much it means to me that you both are here. You both are unbelievably dear friends of mine. Bo, you know, we've gotten to know each other this past year, and I met you the first time down the Pueblos. The respect and love that you get from that community is staggering to me. But I think even more so is what you give back. You know, you're bold and you're hungry and you're brave. And I'm proud, man. I'm proud to call you a friend. And Jay, man, it's been more than 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, met you on a ride along down in Newton, South Central. I've been lucky enough to hang out with a lot of people who really, walk the walk, don't just talk about it, and folks in law enforcement. And you're top billing for me, man. I've never seen someone who gets the kind of respect and love from both the community and other officers. And you give respect, you get respect. I've seen you in action, man. And I've seen you, again, treat everybody with respect, but be willing, ready, and able to take it to any level that somebody wants to take it. And it's taught me a lot and made me a better man and a better father. And I love you, man. And I'm really grateful that you guys are here. And you know, I want to kind of get into sort of your lives and like how you guys got to the place you are, some of your experiences. And I guess, Bo, I want to start with you, man. Like, can you just tell me a little bit, like, I mentioned before how important to me sort of your neighborhood is, but can you just tell me a little bit about the Pueblos and like what it means to you and coming up where you did? I know you bounced around a lot, but can you just sort of talk about that community a little bit?
I mean, you know, I'm really born and raised there, man. You know, it wasn't long that I, you know, anytime I left, it wasn't too long.
Right.
You know, I was always back. You know, my mom, my family, friends, everything always was down there, you know. So I was bred it there, man, you know, and through life, you know, as you grow up and, you know, you do some things in your life, you make bad decisions and it wells on you. And when you get a chance and you mature at the mind, man, and you see what's going on around you, you know, you feel like it's kind of like it's your job, man, because I love that place, man. I love everybody in there.
To give
man.
Back.
To give back, yeah, you know.
Tell us specifically for people don't know, like, what neighborhood are you from?
I'm from the Pueblo Del Rio Housing Projects. And Pueblo Bishop Buzz.
And that's in
South Central Los Angeles, east side of Los Angeles.
What was it like there sort of as a kid? Like, how would you describe that community?
Man, as a kid, man, actually, it was family-orientated. You know what I'm saying? You know, we was back in the days where you can get your ass whooped with a extension card, a switch, a belt, you know, and it wasn't no big deal. You know, you weren't going to go to jail for child abuse and things like that, you know. And if the neighbor down the street caught you doing something and you was out of line, they can whip your ass, take you back home, and then you get another ass whooped. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was kind of family orientated, man. And, you know, you grew up, and back then in those days, you know, it was like mainly like a lot of black families there, man. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of understanding, you know what I'm saying?
And what would you say is the biggest kind of like misconception of, you know, South Central back then?
You know, I think the biggest misconception back there was probably that we didn't give a fuck about each other over there. You know what I'm saying? And that only the gangs cared about each other. And you know, and that it wasn't people that was really trying to grow and get out and, you know, and become something and do something over there, you know. I think that everyone was labeled the same there, you know. Y'all are who y'all are, y'all here, so everybody's a fucking criminal over here, you know what I'm saying? Mm. And which wasn't true, you know what I'm saying? Being there, living there, and growing up there, you know, by far, that's far from the truth, you know what I'm saying? Back in those days, it was a lot of police raids. You know, it's the neighborhood, so people going to hang out. You're going to see people drinking. You're going to see people listening to music. You're going to see people probably just gambling. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to just see people in a huddle talking. Mm-hmm. And everybody that's around there wasn't doing what they was perceived to be doing. You know what I'm saying? So when the raids come, it's just like if you out there, you caught up in it. You fucked up. And the fucked up part about it was you just happened to get caught in the wrong spot where somebody done threw something or some shit like that. That was yours.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it puts you in that mentality, man, where, you know, it's like, fuck it. It's Wild Wild West then. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You done fucked over me and gave me a record now and shit's going to be hard. And, you know, and it's times like that that make it feel like that society is against you. You know what I'm saying? To make you get that I don't give a fuck type mind. You know what I'm saying? Now, some people was out there doing it. Some people did have certain things that they didn't supposed to have out there. You know what I'm saying? But everybody didn't.
I know, you know, people attribute so much about South Central at that time, you know, in the 80s and the 90s with the Bloods and the Crips and all that. Just talk about sort of your relationship with that and that how that started and what like kind of like led you that way.
Well, you know, my relationship, I always had it. I always been affiliated with the Preblos. You know what I'm saying? That's my family. That's my first family. And I'll do anything and go through, you know, any loops for this guy. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's how I started, man, because you don't come out the womb saying this Pueblo Bishop blood. You don't. You know, you come out the womb being a kid. You know, you're going to do the kid shit. And y'all going to become good friends during that childhood. You know what I'm saying? The way L.A. is set up, and if I was born and raised in the Pueblos, whether I got nail tattoo or wore nail red rag or ever hollered blood out my mouth, I'm labeled as a Pueblo. So I can't go on across Slauson and hang out and chill and say, I'm going to stay away from the Pueblos because it's gangbangers over there. Because you're going to get killed over there because they know that you was born in the Pueblos. You cannot be safe and hang nowhere unless you in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. even though you're not a blood. You know what I'm saying? You can't just go to any neighborhood and hang out and feel like you're safe because they know from school, sports, or whatever else, oh, that's the dude from the Pueblos. He's from the Pueblos. And so if you a Crip, automatically, that's a problem. And like for my case, man, it's more or less that I chose, you know, to do what I do, man. You know what I'm saying? I chose it because you try to be right, you try to do right, and it just seemed like it ain't enough, you know. And then you get to that point where, you know, like you say, you feel like society is heavy on you. You know what I'm saying? Well, they label me this. They put me as this. I'm going to be this. And you fall into that trap, man. And so, you know, you just get to this point like I'm in it to win it.
Can you think of like the first sort of thing to you that really sort of set that off on you and sort of emblazoned you into that world and into the blood specifically?
Well, man, you know, like I said, man, it's always been my family over there. But, you know, it's an incident where we're hanging out on Long Beach and, you know, we just maxing, doing what we do, you know, on the daily just as homies, you know what I'm saying? And standing there, two cars ride by, and, you know, they just start spraying bullets. Well, in the midst of that, I lost a homie standing, you know, right there with me. One got shot, one got killed. Mm-hmm. And so you sitting there, you looking at that, and you see the whole thing go down because all you do is duck, and certain people trying to run, certain people trying to duck, so, you know, hide, but you kind of looking and trying to see where it's happening. You see it, everything, you know, and he dropped right in front of you. You know what I'm saying? You're looking and you got, you know, you're helpless. You can't do nothing. All you could do is wait till it's over and then try to see what's going on. But you get over there, then it's too late. You know what I'm saying? And when you see it, you know, that type of shit happen, man, you know, it changes something in you, you know, and you could choose to leave and never come back or to get in the fight. So I'm still in the Pueblo.
When you say it, what do you think it is that like makes that when you say it changes something in you? You know, can you just like describe? Can you just kind of walk me through that a little bit?
I mean, man, you know, like when I say changes something in you, man, it's, you know, when you watch somebody you grew up with and did all the things you did as a child get dropped right in front of you, you know, you come on, man, you know, you want. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Man, you know, and so, you know, like I say, you know, your whole mentality changed, you know, mm-hmm. and you, You know, you make certain decisions in life that ain't healthy for you. My mother was sprung out on crack cocaine, man. You know what I'm saying? My father wasn't around a lot. Most of the men I dealt with in my family was probably my uncles, you know what I'm saying, and my homeboys. And the killing part about it, whether you know it or not, when you going to school and you playing ball and you doing, and you see your homies that's banging and selling dope and shit, man, they don't tell you to come out there and sell dope for them.
Right.
They don't. They try to keep you away from the block. But you ain't trying to hear that shit because you want to do what you want to do. And they literally chases you off the block. They tells you, man, keep doing what you're doing. You don't need this. Like I never, ever, ever had not one homeboy while I was playing ball and doing my thing say, fuck the sports, come out here and be a blood and sell this dope with us. Ever in my life. And I swear that on my children. Not one time have I ever in my life told a youngster that. I can't remember a time in my lifetime where one of my homies and said, well, the homie told me stop playing ball and come out there and sell dope and play.
Right.
That's bullshit, man.
Right.
The homie forced me to be a blood. No,
right.
It don't work like that because we were family before we were anything. Before you represent any color, any block, any number, anything, we were all family. And, you know, so it's like, man, more of the love that you get, man. You got to think, man, it was a lot of fatherless kids over there. Mm-hmm. A lot of mothers that got caught up in that crack, you know, epic, that pen, you know, the whole thing with the, with the crack shit, man. You know what I'm saying? And you seeing your mother out on the block pushing carts and all kind of shit, can't pay rent, getting kicked out, you know, and you can't go nowhere once your mom get kicked out of them projects. You where else can you go and hang besides them projects?
Right.
And that was the thing. You were stuck there, man. You know what I'm saying? Unless you can figure out with minor education how to get a job and get your credit up. And that shit, man. We wasn't thinking about that shit back then, bro.
Right.
You had to be fortunate and lucky to fucking go somewhere where somebody can give you the advice to even think about start talking about credit and buying a house in college and all that shit.
And I imagine at that time, the 80s and 90s, and Jay, that's a, you know, a good way to bring you, like, you're talking about a time period and a place that was extremely violent. You spent the vast majority, almost all of your career in Newton, in that same neighborhood.
Right.
Just tell me a little bit about, tell me a little bit about your family and then sort of like about, you know, coming into Newton.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was he worked for the studios for a while. Then he decided to open his own business, like construction business. And he did, you know, marble counters, marble bathtubs. And, you know, he was one of eight. So we had lots of cousins and stuff. And most everybody at one time worked for my dad, you know, either pushing a broom or installing or whatever. And he moved us from Van Nuys out to Northridge. And I think it was more just to kind of keep us away from what he had seen. He's the youngest. So, you know, a couple of his brothers were bad. A couple were good. So he's like, hey, you know, I got the opportunity. The houses were cheap out there at the time. I think they paid like $22,000 for our first house, you know, and that's fuck. So we moved out there, and it, you know, again, $22,000 at that time is a struggle. You know, it's the mid '60s when we moved out there, and so I was kind of pulled away from that. We didn't see any violence. You know, at high school, junior high, high school, there'd be a few fights, you know, and that was it. But my uncles would, you know, we'd see them at family gatherings, and my dad like, hey, stay over here. You know, blah, blah, blah. A couple of them both been in and out of prison. One was paralyzed. He was, I think, 1968. He was shot by the police when he was trying to escape court. He had, you know, he was in court for a robbery. He had a dope problem. He was shooting heroin. And so he tried to make a run out of the courtroom. And back then,
I don't mean it.
Drugs, man, make you do crazy shit, right? And so he's going to fucking run out of court and get away. Well, back then, fleeing felon was a fleeing felon. That was a shoot. You know, cops could shoot you for that shit. So he makes it out and down the hallway, and the cop catches him running down the hallway and shoots him and paralyzes him.
So knowing that the police shot your uncle, did that color your opinion of police at that time?
Well, it, you know, we didn't find out again, my dad trying to keep this shit away from us. Hey, what happened to, you know, what happened to Uncle Sabino? He fucking got a car wreck, man. He's paralyzed. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, went through the windshield. I'm like, you know, wear your seatbelt. Yeah, all right, Dad, whatever. And then it took a while for us to finally find out what happened, you know? And I'm like,
But what do you think about that? I mean, sort of like to kind of like what Bo was talking about. I mean, had you found out about that at that time in your, do you think that that would have like colored your image of the police, or would it?
I don't know, because my dad was like, hey, you fucking respect the police. If you go to jail for fighting or doing some shit, I'll come get you. But if you go to jail for some bullshit, fucking selling dope or fucking with these guys, these dope heads, I'm not going to get you. You know, I'm like, okay. He goes, just fucking do the right thing. And then my mom's brother, he was a policeman, and fuck, he's, you know, 6'4". And he's just a big figure, you know. He would take his cam, but don't be fucking around. And he had three boys. So my best buddy growing up, he went to the sheriff's department. And I was, at the time, I was like, you know, 20 or 21. I was working for my dad. And fuck, man, it's just, hey, Dad, fuck, what the fuck you guys doing here? Get off the fucking desk. Get on the fucking broom. Hey, do this, do that. And, you know, he was a yeller, you know? Yeah. And, but he liked his beer and you know, every day he'd fucking drink. And so we'd shoot home or whatever. And, you know, he'd fucking show up 10:30, 11, sauced or whatever. But his work ethics were fucking second to none. No matter how fucked up he would be, drunk, hungover, 6 a.m., man, he's up. Showering and out the door, back to work, you know. So we all worked for him. My brother worked for him. My cousins worked for him. But I was like, man, this is fucking, it's a good business, but I can't stay here, man.
Can't get yelled at.
Yeah, for all this time. So that's when my buddy joined up with the sheriffs. I'm like, well, fuck the sheriffs. I don't want to go to the sheriffs, you know. I don't want to be in the jails for 2 or 3 years. So I applied for LAPD and I applied for Burbank PD. I got hired right before Christmas, 87. So I was going to start in January, 88. And then, shit, 2 days after I got hired for LAPD, Burbank calls, hey, well, you know, we got a spot for you. I'm like, ah, I'm good. But I got sent on probation after the academy to North Hollywood, which at the time, you know, you have lower class up in the north end, trouble. You have a lot of cocaine, a lot of heroin up there. The regular middle class, working Joe's stuff, not very many problems. And then you have the rich down there, Ventura Boulevard, which you'd hardly ever get any calls. And so I got a chance to work with some different guys. I liked working the north end because it was busier. You do a lot of observation arrests, a lot of work, you know, you're shaking the bushes and doing this stuff. But there were some fucking absolute lazy fucking guys that didn't want to do shit, you know. And then I got assigned to the south end car. And I'm like, all right, great, you know. And, you know, you're a young cop. You want to fucking chase everybody, chase bad guys, and chase this and that. And I get signed down to Ventura Boulevard, right? I'm like, all right, you know, probably find something to do down here. And all right, kid, let's go to the coffee shop. All right. So you're going to get your coffee, and, you know, we'll roll out of there, right? No, just sit out here by the car. So another car would show up, and they'd sit there for fucking 2 hours, right? Gonna do, man. Shit going on out here, man. No, just, you know, don't worry about it. All right. He goes, all right, let's go up to Mulholland, right? So we go up to Mulholland, he'd pull over. By this time it was like 2:33 in the morning. He goes, all right, man, pull over. All right. Okay. I want you to go from Coldwater Canyon to the border of Hollywood. Don't drive over 20 miles an hour. Like, okay, what are we looking for? He goes, I'm gonna take a nap. Lord, I'm like, you gotta be fucking shitting me. It was waking me up at 6.
Wow.
And I'm like, God damn, is this fucking police work, man? What the fuck is this shit, man? And 6 o'clock, like, hey, boss, man. And he pressed the station. Go ahead, let's go to the station. I'm like, fuck, we didn't do shit, dude. Nah, don't worry about it. I got something to do today. You know, he wanted to go play golf in the morning, whatever. So you would get. It was good in a way you got different variations of coppers. I mean, most of the guys were Vietnam vets And those guys, some of those guys, man, they wanted to work. They wanted to work. So we go out, boom, 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 you know. And we'd stay busy till 3-4 in the morning. I learned how to do dope. I learned how to do hypes. You know, these guys were teachers. And I'm like, you know, hey, what else do you want to do? I haven't done this. Can we try this? And he goes, okay, you know, let's try that. Let's go. And he shows me how to read, you know, the needle marks and watch people's eyes. And I'll show it was an education. You know, and you just sit there. You're like a sponge, man. You take it all in because I want to do this. I want to learn. I want to be able to know how to do all this stuff. So you got guys that you love working with and guys that you didn't. But you can't say shit. You're on probation, you know. And so after probation, then I went to Newton in June of 89.
So June of 89, Newton, South Central. So What was your first impression of that?
Fuck, I mean, this place stinks. It's the rendering plant, the Farmer John rendering plants just in the city of Vernon there. And man, I know you know that smell, man, because it's on those hot, sticky nights, summer nights, it's death. It smells like fucking death. And we're in the old station. It was a piece of shit station. It was built in, yeah. I don't know, the 20s or 30s, right? And the first 3 nights I was there, 5 murders, right? Wow. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on, man?
And what's the stigma? I mean, like, as a police officer, what's the stigma of a Newton cop, you know, shooting Newton? Like, what would other police say about Newton cops, and what would they say about Newton, especially at that time?
You either love it or you hate it, and you would stay forever, or you left within a couple months.
It just wasn't for you.
Exactly. And you'd see guys come in, and they're like, fuck this place. I'm going to the Valley, man. I could have nice restaurants to eat. You know, people love us out there. I mean, fuck, we drive down Central. We got Tams. You go over to Figueroa. You go to fucking Beef Bowl. I mean, just like shit places, you know? So, like, okay, whatever. And it was busy. If you're at Newton, you're working. You're working. They want hard workers. And sure, there was a few slugs there. You know, I mean, it's going to happen. But most of the time, guys hustled. Fucking step it up or get the fuck out of here.
Because it's so busy. There was such a high volume of calls. It was so, and it was an intensely violent time.
Yeah, man with a gun. There was a man with a gun, you know, and shootings were going off all the time. Crack was huge. It just really, mid-80s, I think it really started popping off with the Rock. Back then, they would hold it, man. You'd get them with bags of dope and shit. As time has evolved, everybody's learned. Everybody learns, you know, and from coppers to bad guys is, you know, hey, don't be holding fucking 20 rocks on you, man.
And ultimately, you joined Crash.
Yeah, I got into Crash in 90, in like April or May of 90.
And can you just explain
what Crash was? Crash was Criminal Resources Against Street Hoodlums, which is what their gang unit. And so you're responsible for gang intelligence, responding to gang-related crimes, gang investigations. So you would be expected to know who's who in the neighborhood. So each officer kind of had their own gangs that they like working. So I would be over on the west side of the division, certain Hispanic gangs, and then as you go further south, we get into some of the black, mostly Crips, because the only Bloods in Newton were down in the Pueblos or the Bloodstone Villains, and then I think there were some up in the rolling 20s, rolling 30s.
And 40s.
Yeah, 40s. So a small group around the station, but I was most of the time over dealing with either Broadway's, Ford Deuce, Ford Trade Cribs, Avalon's, and East Coast Cribs. So that was my thing, kind of working on the west side of the division. And then certain guys like working the Pueblos. And, you know, I mean, you see the same faces over there all the time.
Can you remember sort of your first interaction with the police? You know, what was your sort of attitude towards them?
I never trust the police because I just seen some of the shit they did. But my first reaction, I was still in high school. And by this time, I had went down to stay with my grandmother in Oregon. So it was summer. Came back to L.A., you know, happy, playing ball and, you know, just glad to be back and see my friends. It was after I made it from the bus station, I just made it to my mom's house. I put my bags up and everything, and I started walking to the neighborhood, to the Pueblos, through the park. When I got through the park, a car came up and three dudes jumped. I'm like, they were like, put your hands on your head. And this, I'm like, what you do? Well, for what? You know, I'm, what happened? Turn, and then he grabbed me and slammed me and put his knee all in my neck and shit and handcuffed me. And the first thing he told me, what they call you over here? Fuck you mean what they call me over here? They call me nothing. They call me my name, Dante. Nah, take your shirt off. Lift my shirt up, start looking around, everything. Like, man, what's up? Where you going? And they searching, looking all through the bushes, everything and all that. Ran my name, all that shit had me. By this time, it was a whiff of it that got back to my mother now. So everybody knew that, you know, I ain't been there. I've been going to school, you know, trying to do something out of town. So a bunch of crowd of people come in. What the fuck is y'all doing with him? He ain't even over here. Like, you know, they just making a, you know, big deal because they roughing me up. You know what I'm saying? They swearing up and down I'm a gang member. So I didn't know nothing about the white card and all that. And they telling them, he's not a gang member. Don't put him in there as a
what's the white card?
A white card is this information they get from you. And they put all your information on this card, and they put you as a Pueblo gang member. Mm-hmm.
And that's what the crash guys are trying
yeah,
to
do. Yeah, so you have a little 3x4 cards, a FI card, field information right. card, name, you know, social, phone number, address, all that shit. And there's a section, gang, and then AKA moniker, whatever, like that.
So, you know, it was like, you know, that shit pissed me off. I had a tear dropping out my eye. Man, you know, because I'm like, what the fuck is that? I just came yeah. from being in school and I'm going to see, you know, hang out. I don't care what the fuck going over here. What made you come grab me and slam me on the ground? Mm-hmm. Just because I'm asking what's going on. I'm scared. Really, I'm scared, man. Because sure. they jump out, get your fucking hand, turn around and all. You know, they like, make sure you don't run. You know, and that incident from right there had me running from the police all the time. All the time. I'm not finna, when I see him come, I'm not finna sit up there and tell me to get on my knees and all that. You know, I'm fuck all that. You finna do your job fucking with me. It's gonna be a foot race. And more than all the time, I won.
Like, how often when you stop somebody, would they run?
Oh, I mean,
Back then,
I mean, you'd crack the door and fucking, you see the bottom of their tennis shoes rolling, you know? So, in our minds, that man, that motherfucker's heated up, man, right. you know, or he's got something on him. But a lot of times, like you say, man, I'm like, man, I got my clean shit on. I'm not about to get fucked up, put on the ground and my clothes ruffled up.
That's the mentality of the folks that you're talking to.
That's the mentality of the folks because everybody has a different way of working. By knowing the people and getting to know people, it's a little easier. But that's like experience you gather over time, you know? And that's why they would always put you with an older guy that knows the neighborhood or...
But who that older guy is so unbelievably
fucking
important, 100%. Right? Because some guys just
100%.
Really... Some guys are evil and vile and want to go fuck people
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you know.
And some people are really trying to make a difference,
absolutely.
Right?
So,
can you give me an example of that?
Yeah, I mean, I worked with my first partner. He passed away. He got killed up on Highway 138. They were transporting somebody for witness protection out to Victorville area out there, and him and his partner were coming back, and wrong way, fucking head on, and end up killing him, and the other guy he was with, he got fucked up pretty good, and so LAPD had a list of 44, right, the most violent or complained of officers for uses of forces and stuff, and he was on that list. His temper was about fucking that long, right? You learn some of the shit what to do and some of the shit of what not to do. And so he was good with picking out dopers and shit like that. And then my next partner who I got to work with, he was good with guns, you know. And he's like, hey, look for this, look for that. This is where they hide guns. This is how they, you know, they're always checking. And they're always like, if the cops, you know, you see a cop car rolling up, they'll fucking kind of like, just casually check, make sure the gun's not showing, you know? And we got a lot of guns, you know? It was a real good learning experience. And he treated people a little bit different, you know? He knew a lot of people. And a lot of times we'd grab fuckers, take them back to their mama's house, and mama would whoop that ass.
Because, but I mean, there's a us versus them mentality that causes all kinds of.
I think, yeah, you know, like his fuck. He comes back to Newton. His first experience, they're throwing him on the fucking ground. So fuck yeah, I'm gonna be pissed off, man. Right. You know, so,
I know you get that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm like, all right. I mean, I get that, dude. Not everyone's bad, but it takes a time for these guys. And I'm not making an excuse for anybody. There's fucking asshole cops, just like there's asshole people out there.
Right.
And like, motherfucker, you need to fucking learn who's right and who's wrong. And the only way you're going to do that is talking to somebody, you know? So we'd roll up on somebody, and if they give us fucking attitude, and this and that, oh, fuck you, man. Fuck you. I'm like, all right, bro. It's cool, man. We ain't got nothing, you know? Like, all right, you want to be an asshole? Cool. And a lot of times they'd be showing off, you know, because you'd catch them alone. Hey, man, sorry, man, but I couldn't, you know, the fucking homies are there, man. I can't, you know, I can't be no punk, man, but, you know, I'm sorry, you know, and shit like that. So you get it. You learn, and then going over and over these neighborhoods, you see the same cats, and, you know, like, fuck, that's, you know, that's a bad motherfucker. So we rolled through Broadway Hood, you and I, one night.
Yeah.
And there was this one cat from Broadway's, and he would never talk to the police, you know. And we knew he was running the operation and shit, but like I said, man, I don't catch you dirty, I don't catch you. Yeah. You know, he was smart. He was a smart cat. And so we're talking to one gangster, and as we drive away, he walks back over to this guy, and he slaps the fuck out of him, right? And I'm looking in the mirror, I'm like, okay, all right. He just got disciplined, man, for talking to the fucking police man. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, the biggest thing in anything is a fucking rat, man. You know, on both sides, fucking police, fucking gangsters, criminals. Nobody wants to fucking deal with a rat or even think you're dealing with a rat, you know? So, yeah, we had to be careful. You know, you'd get called.
But that's that other side of loyalty, right? I mean, I would imagine in both sort of institutions, it's like there's a currency for being loyal, man. Like, you got to be loyal. You got to be the kind of person who's, I mean, you're judged on your actions, not on what you say. And do you think that there's any kind of dark side to loyalty, or are these sort of expectations of being there for somebody where it actually makes you do things that aren't good for either one of you?
The beautiful side to it is, you know, it's just when you in need, and then I ain't talking like money or whatever, you know, it's for instance, man, if I'm at the movie theater, me and two homies, and 15, 10, you know, or the other guys come in and I'm stuck there, and you make that phone call, and before you know it, it's about 30 motherfuckers that came up there and making sure you get out of there safe. You know, that's that beautiful side to
100%.
That's the side that make you want to stay loyal to it. Yeah. Like, man, they love me. They put their life on the line. These motherfuckers stopped everything and came up here for me just off of my phone call. You know what I'm saying? Then the other side is, yeah, it is, you know, you get caught up in the trust game so hard, and you really don't see what's going on. You know, and whether, you know, like, for instance, you know, selling dope and getting money was a big thing in the 80s, you know, and 90s. So, you know, you have some motherfuckers that's going to cross you. You know, it's some homies that didn't die like that because other homies then came back and robbed them and did shit, you know, and, you know, or just the dude that you thought was solid told and you know, shit, you had to go do a bid. You know what I'm saying? So it's a good side and a bad side to it, man. But, you know, I mean, that's the way of life.
You know, specifically over the last, you know, a couple of years with sort of the anti-police movement and all this sort of like the police being under the scrutiny that they are, a lot of the issues that have been coming up is really because of this loyalty. It's because, okay, I see there's this officer with his knee on this man's neck and they're dying, but they don't want to cross a line. They don't want to be disloyal, or they don't want to act out of, so they're not doing anything about it. I think that that's the real toxic side. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that incident there, and I'm looking at that shit and I'm like, what the fuck are these guys, these other guys doing? Why is he down there? You got a crowd of people. I mean, get that cat up and get him in the fucking car. What the fuck are they doing standing there, man? Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm like, you're just as much as fault because you're not doing anything.
And you even know? Though that they were sort of younger officers.
But what's right is right.
What's right is right.
You know? And
that's real courage, right? I mean, that's real.
I'm like, hey, man, I'm not going to sit here and watch this fucking copper beat the shit out of somebody with handcuffs on. And that was my big fucking deal. Once the cuffs are on, that's it, man.
But that shit went on, though.
No,
Jerry.
Absolutely.
That
no,
shit
100%.
Went on. And I mean, 100%. It went on, man.
100%. And I'm not going to sit here and debate that, man, because that's, you know, it happened.
And that was the fucked up part about it. That's the part that make you say, fuck the police, man, for real. And the worst thing is to run and get caught.
Oh, yeah.
If you run and get caught, guaranteed, you just know. You already know. That's why motherfuckers used to try so hard to make sure they get away. That's why it was through any means necessary. I don't care if you got to run through three tigers, a lion, and a gorilla.
Right.
You're going to try to get away because you know if they catch
you. If you make them run.
Yeah. And or if you hide and they call a helicopter in the forest, you know that dog coming. You know all that. So you trying to just get away. You don't want to get stuck nowhere and be nowhere, man, because you know that ass going to get whooped. You know what I'm saying? And then don't try to fight back. That ass going to get stumped. You know what I'm saying? It was a fucked up feeling, man, because sometimes you really ran because you just didn't want to deal with the shit, man. It's like, man, when is they going to figure out that, goddamn, everybody ain't doing wrong? So why you got to jump out and make me get on my knees or put my fingers together and squeeze the fuckers real hard and pull me back and, you know, just all this fucked up shit that hurt.
You don't want that experience.
You don't want it. No, but you don't want it time and time and time. Sometimes you just go through the process because you just ain't up for it. You know you clean. You know you know. And the motherfuckers that dirty most likely going to run are the people that just don't want to do it. They're going to run. But if you stay there and they run, you still get the treatment. So you was in a lose-lose no matter how it go. So, you know, you had no sympathy for police because this is what was going on for years on top of years on top of years, no matter what you was trying to do. If you was there, you was there, and you probably a fucked up individual to them if they don't know who you are and they didn't know who you are.
Yeah, I mean, you roll up on a group of guys and one guy fucking bones out. All right, fuck it, man. I can't catch that motherfucker, you know. Even when I was running all the time, man, I can't run, dude. I had one guy, he was a good runner. I'm like, hey, man, just fucking catch him and wait till I get there, bro. You know, and fucking chase the motherfuckers and fuck, I catch up after a minute, you know. But like you say, man, no, I totally get it, man. And that's just the way. Like these pursuits. You see these fucking pursuits on TV now? Motherfuckers are hanging out of the cars and fucking filming themselves and going live and on Facebook and all this shit. I'm like, man, those motherfuckers would have got tuned up back in the day.
I think part of what we're talking about here is like stigma, right? And that you're just hanging out with some guys on a block, whatever period of time of your life. But there have been people who have just been out on a block and that have been forced to be in these humiliating and painful situations for no reason whatsoever except for the color of their skin, the neighborhood they happen to be in. That's not fair. It's un-American, right? But at the same time, there's a stigma attached to police officers in general around this country. Whether you engage in that kind of behavior or not, you're made to feel like the enemy when you're also engaging in an unbelievably high-risk job. You've probably lost people that you care about the same way that you care about your homeboys. I know you've lost people and you've been shot at, and that feeling that's not fair. It exists on both sides of this.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you see shit on the news and you see shit that's videotaped and you're like, fuck me, dude. It's coming. Now now we're going to pay for this for months until the next incident happens. It's fucking business, man. It's not fucking personal. And when it goes over to that personal side, that's when you have problems. As you know, when it gets fucking personal, you got to remember, this is your job. Don't take shit personal. Mm-hmm. And once you cross that line, that's when it goes sideways.
That thing about not making it personal. I mean, what is the relationship between Newton and the Pueblos? Those two institutions were just sort of like set up.
Yeah, they like, seriously, and this is speaking from a lot of guys, and I talked to a lot of guys in the neighborhood. It was two separated institutions, like two separate. It was totally separated. You know, we felt like, at some point, as we got older and wiser, we knew that you come as a rookie, and if you get assigned to the Pueblos, you're going to move up. You get signed to that East Side, you're going to move up in rank. That was some of the stuff we were starting to pick up on and notice.
Why is that?
Shit like, because they just went over there and kicked ass. We feel like they pounded on us, you know, over there. Not just the Pueblos, the villains and the whatever else over there, that east side, that whole east side area, you know what I'm saying? And it was like some statements made by other police, you know what I'm saying? It kind of took us there to understand that. You know,
is there anything that you can remember that you've seen that you've, like, back in the day that you've respected that you saw the police do over there?
I could say it was one officer that we all know. And it was a little kid named Simi over there, man, that was having brain cancer, and he was dying. He only had a certain amount of time to live. And I really didn't fuck with this officer because he talked too much, like I felt.
I think we know who that is.
And like, when I first came back to the scene, you know, after my vacation, and he didn't know who I was, so he's all the kind of trying to come talk to me. And I don't know. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to none of y'all. I don't have nothing to say, you know. So his statement was, oh, we got to watch this guy. You know, if they don't talk to the police, you know, they up to something. No, I don't want to talk to the police. Yeah. I don't want to talk to you and nobody else. You know what I'm saying? I'm literally just coming from doing a bid, you know. So we don't have shit to talk about, you know. But it's crazy because down the line, as it got so bad for him to where he had to go to the hospital and they keep him comfortable, I used to see this guy there probably 3-4 times a week crying like a fucking baby, bro. Literally. I'm talking about tears in this guy's eyes. Mm-hmm. And it fucked me up, man. Because I'm like, holy shit, like, this dude gives a fuck. So it kind of made me feel like, you know, hey, maybe they all ain't so bad.
Right. You know, right.
So that was one of the moments right there that I would seriously reconsider that every officer is a bad officer.
Bobby D, he's I mean, I love the guy like a brother, man. He's got a fucking huge heart, and you know, taking care of the kid there and helping out, and he was
who he is.
Yeah, yeah. He was getting frustrated because he didn't do it for attention. He doesn't do shit for attention. He does it because that's who he is. And when it started gathering a little bit of attention, and of course, you know, the fucking, once the brass gets a hold of the upper command staff, they want to fucking take pictures and take credit, and fucking Bobby was getting pissed off, you know, and he's like, I'm not doing it for that, because he truly cared, you know. And like you say, man, you know, he'll talk you to death. He'll fucking absolutely sit there and talk you to death, man, but he's got a good fucking heart. You know, we're getting older, man. You know, we're getting older. Shit, some of the shit doesn't matter anymore. It's like, hey, man, let's just be fucking good people, man. And I don't think I ever ran into Bo there. I mean, I might have, you know.
You mean on the streets?
On the streets years ago. But like I said, the Pueblos wasn't my thing. I like being over on the east side. So we'd go over there when something would happen. But the first time I think we actually talked was over at the warehouse, yeah. You know. And yeah. And part of that thing of getting older and you know, you fucking respect people no matter what until they fucking give you something to not respect them for.
You know, knowing you as well as I do, and then getting to know Bo, and then, like, there's no way you guys wouldn't find love for each other, because I feel like you guys hold the same principles true, that you got to mean what you say and say what you mean, that you care about your communities, you care about your families. I'm curious to how you guys feel like the state of policing is today, and you know, crime right now, and the ability to have crime enforcement. You know, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
But you know, I'm one that, and I'm serious, I don't give a fuck who don't like it. I'm not one for defunding the police, man. But I think that it's a whole bunch of shit. Because, man, like, at some point, they are needed, bro. They are, you know. But I think that they need to fix a lot of issues inside themselves. They got to attend to the gangs inside the gang.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that like, I don't have a solution. I wouldn't try to come to a solution. But I think at some point, like I say, that ambassador shit we're doing, at some point, let us police a lot of things in our neighborhood. Because some shit can be diffused and you ain't even got to get out your car. You know what I'm saying? Let us handle it. Now, it's shit that where it's going to have to be attended to. Attend to it.
And what I've seen when relationships are formed and you know people in the neighborhood, the way that you used to police and the way that what we're talking about with Deemer, we have to both celebrate and look at people who are doing it right. because I think my problem, and I think what we're really guilty of in this country, is the wrong people are sort of leading this charge. Mm-hmm. It's people who have never really been in high crime communities are saying, hey, we don't need the police anymore. Well, maybe you don't need the police because you've never been in these kinds of communities.
I think there needs to be go-to people in every neighborhood. If you have those people in place that you can go to, they go back, they're respected within their homeboys and everything. And we're respected with our guys. Like, hey, man, give us 5 minutes, man. Mm-hmm. Let us fucking squash this shit before it goes sideways, man.
I literally seen police put shit on people, arrest them, and give them a case. You know, it's not just me getting my ass whooped. It's what I seen. I know a dude who got a double life sentence on the murders that he wasn't even there. And the reason we knew he wasn't there because he was with 10 other people in a dice game when the shit happened. Right. The shit happened in one part of the neighborhood. It's like 10 people right here in the fucking dice game on the porch. So when somebody came and said, hey, man, some shit happened over there, y'all better go, everybody left. And the man went to jail for a double life sentence. Mm-hmm. Wasn't even there. Swear to God, man. Yeah, and I swear to you on my kid's life. Was nowhere. Didn't even know it happened. So it's a fucked up situation all the way around.
100%.
And, you know, and like I say, it's hard. Just like for them, it's hard to trust.
Totally.
It's hard to trust.
That's what
so
I'm
it
saying.
Keep a distinction, man, because, you know, you seen this shit. You like, fuck, what if that happened to me? Then you get this narrow in your mind where, nah, if this happens, if they try to do me, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hold court on the street. I'm going to do the fuck that. At some point, I ain't going to keep taking this shit, man. Yeah. You know, and it get like that, you know?
Yeah.
And even probably with their side.
Right.
But, you know, but I'm thinking like the shit that I done seen, man. But I done seen it on more than one occasion, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's really, really so hard. You know what I'm saying? It's really, really so hard. And a lot of them still to this point today don't give a fuck if it is a relationship. You know, where it could be some cool shit.
Bo, you're going to go through your life, bro, and there's going to be a certain percentage that's like, fuck, I don't give a fuck, man. I ain't trusting that, you know. I've lived that life, man.
Yeah, it happens. And I was in that struggle for a while.
Yeah.
With an officer that you know.
No, I know. We both have
and
a mutual friend.
And this motherfucker, for some reason, man, was on my shit.
Yeah.
And he wanted to convict me for murder. He wanted to convict
How did you
me
know
for
that?
Murder.
How did you
because
know
he told me. He kicked in my right. door, took me to the man, ran up in my house, kicked in, you know, and had me in the station telling me this. Come on, man, get the fuck out of here. Like, whatever.
Yeah,
and
book
do what
me.
You got to do. You know?
Book me.
You book, yeah. You know, and every time it got to the point to where I didn't even give a fuck when I seen him, because every time I seen him, then he had the rest of the police officers on my shit. And, you know, every time I made a move, you know, there was, and he'd pull up just real simple and fuck with me and talk shit, you know.
And there again, there's the personal side of it, man. You're like, what the fuck is the beef, man?
Right.
You know? Yeah, and I talked to him about it, and he's like, well, fuck, man. There's something in there, dude. He just won't tell me, you know? And I'm not going to make excuses for him. The fucking shit happens, man. You know? Again, it's personal. But yeah,
Jerry,
to put
you
out
got
on
the
that.
Evidence,
book,
for a person
yeah.
being a fucking
That's
murderer,
what, exactly.
you can convict that dude from being a murderer.
Thank you.
Now, the evidence is right there in your fucking face.
Right.
What the fuck is you on me for? Because this is what he felt. He felt like I'm supplying a whole bunch of dope and shit over there and trying to make the blood car strong.
Right.
You know, and like I'm trying to make the blood car strong and all this. And I'm working with the Mexicans and everything, you know, that they working through me and shit. Like, that was his big thing right there, man.
Right.
You know, and he felt like he wanted that shit up out of there. You know what I'm saying? And so he had this bandana with me. Like, now, you know, my name came up, oh, possible, whatever. Okay, you kicked in my door. You took me in. You tried to fucking arrest me for it and all that. It didn't work. I walked out the station the same day. You know what I'm saying? Look, man, what the fuck you keep fucking with me for? You know what I'm saying? But that's the shit. And that's the shit that the other officers... Brooks, man, I'm not finna. And he starts coming with the shit,
right.
And all you know, like, and then different... now you got all these motherfuckers, and then finally till they found something to, you know, throw me away with an old ass fucking case or some bullshit that I didn't even get arrested by the feds with the first time, and that's how the fuck they came with that bullshit.
Right. And that's what I don't understand. These guys, well, bring this guy in. I go, what do you got? You got something on? Can we book him? Can we book him tonight for this? Whatever you want to say, attempt murder. whatever. Can we book this cat tonight? Oh, he's going to talk. Like, fuck, he's not going to talk, man. Come on. No, just bring him in. We bring him in. Fuck, you know, he'd be there an hour and we'd see him walking out the door. I go, okay, well, you just fucked yourself because you threw all your cards on the fucking table and you ain't got shit.
When they was in the hood for something and they running through the hood and they putting this little thing on, oh, where Bojangles at? You know, and so I'm getting all these phone calls and shit. You know, that person is riding through the neighborhood talking about
throwing your name out
and all that. So you know what I did? I went straight to the police station that same day and I said,
I'm here.
So I asked for him. And he came. I said, man, I heard you was looking for me. I ain't looking for you. Oh, you ain't been riding through the neighborhood talking about where I'm at and all that shit? I mean, what you thought it was going to put me, make me hide or some shit? No, I'm going to bring it to you.
Right.
What? Oh, well, they asked me some questions about something that even had nothing to do with that. Look, man, come on. I'm out of here.
The game,
you know what
man.
I'm saying? Yeah.
It's the game.
Yeah. So, playing, you know, I left. So I'm not running. I'm not finna hide. I'm not finna do none of that, motherfucker. But you, for some reason, you was really convinced on this, man. You know what I'm saying? And it was crazy because that led up to me getting arrested like 3 more times for getting in confrontations with officers. Where I kind of say I got off, I didn't get, you know, the normal beat down. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it was just like, whatever, now. You know, you grab me, I'm snatching, and I'm not finna just keep letting y'all do this shit
right,
to me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I had 3 arrests, but all the arrests was like, you know, DA rejects, dismissed, you know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, just
because,
bullshit,
you know,
bullshit,
man, but it's because I'm sick of this shit. You know, and that's what it was leading up to the point to where it was going to turn into something dangerous. And you know, my time away gave me time to, you know, change my attitude and my thoughts, man.
But, you know, like Jerry, I mean, you were ambushed by a gang, you know, shot at. Your partner was shot, you know what I mean?
1993, me and my partner, Mendoza, we went down, we had grabbed a kid from East Coast for some water. He had some PCP, and we were taking him back up and going through the Broadway hood. Saw this one cat, man. This, like I said, told you before, man, this guy should have played pro ball. Fast as fuck, man. Never catch him. I didn't even try to catch him, man. You know, I'm like, man, the first time this dude booked it, he was up over the fence with, you know, one step, and he was over the fence. I'm like, man, I ain't never going to catch that cat. The only time we got him was when he ran into his house. We got him in his house. I'm like, but he always had, you know, he always carried a gun on him. We're rolling down the street, and this base head I always talked to, man, he was nervous as fuck, right? Because I always sit there and just chat with him for a second. He's like, oh, man, I got to go, and he bones out, right? Like, what the fuck was that about? So my partner's in the back seat. You know, we had the unmarked cars, and so my partner's behind me and the resties and in the right size. So we roll up and I see these cats. I see homeboy kind of standing on the sidewalk there, and I'm rolling in and I start to slow down, and here comes the shirt, man. He grabs a shirt and he grabs his pistol. Well, at the same time, guy I never saw, he was hiding between a G-Ride and his garage. He just starts fucking lighting it up. He's got a 44 mag Ruger.
Shooting at us.
Yeah. So he's shooting at my partner. So, I mean, it takes you a second. You're like, fuck, something. What the fuck is going on here? Because I'm focusing on this guy in front of me. So then all of a sudden we see this cat. So he's blazing away. So I start shooting at him. My partner's shooting at him. In the meantime, the guy that we initially saw, he's got a 40 cal and a 10 millimeter. So he's shooting with both hands. And then another Broadway's up on the porch, and he's got a 9, and he's shooting. So we end up dropping the one guy that first started shooting. And then once he goes down, I swing my attention to the other guy. And for whatever reason, I cracked the door, right? I don't know, man. In my mind, am I going to go out and go after him? Because he's starting to fucking boogie. And so that's when my partner goes, I'm hit. Get me the fuck out of here. So throw it in gear, the restee's screaming. He's, fucking shot. So down the street to go, I hit the corner, and that's when I go to the back and I see my partner, man. He's bleeding. You know, he took one right below the armpit, hit a rib, came out behind his neck. And one of the rounds hit him in the middle finger. He was shooting back. It took a direct hit on the magazine, front of the magazine wheel, and took his finger off, one through the knee, and then one through his thigh area. So he got hit four times with the 44, and the one that bounced off his rib, I mean, what is that, one in a million? Hit a rib and went out a different direction. Otherwise, it would have cleaned him out in the center. And then the guy in the back seat, he had one. Went through the windshield, under my arm, under my armpit, through the seat, and hit him right in the ten ring. But crazy. You know, going through the glass, going through the seat, it slowed it down enough to where they just popped it out. And I think he got hit in the knee or in the hand, and me nothing, right? So get out, you know, call the troops, put out a help call and everything. And one of the cars rolls up, and they grab. My partner, a guy you know, one of the guys that was after you for a while. They throw him in the police car and they take him down to the fire station on Main and Gage. So, you know, he lived. He was off for about a year and a half, lost his finger. And but, you know, it's like the whole wrath of Newton Division came down on Broadway's for the next, you know, months. Pretty much wiped him out there for a while. And slowly they, you know, slowly they came back.
One of the things that's inspired me, you know, as much as really anything in the last few years is, you know, what you and Shy built down there and in terms of the theater company. And I just talked a little bit about Sloss and Rec and how you see giving back and the opportunities that you're providing for folks down there.
With Shia, man, you know, awesome guy, man, you know, and we were on the set of Tax Collector, man, and down the line, once, you know, after you there for months with these people, you know, y'all become family in there, man. And he was one of the dudes that was, like, really, really cool, you know, and showed a lot of love to not just me but my family. And so make no mistake about it, every person there, no matter what color they are, is my family over there. And the way you handle yourself over there, man, you know, you earned a whole lot of respect from. And, you know, and he said, man, yeah, I appreciate that, but we got to give something back. And then from there, man, the guy kept his word, man, and we just tried to just, you know, through this experimental thing, just try to, you know, create something special to stay there, man, you know, and he was down with it 100, man.
And the energy and vitality and just talent, we ended up all getting together and putting on that reading, yeah. Man, that you start yeah. in and yeah. that – you got the whole space yeah. together and you organized, and it was sort of this beautiful, for me, this beautiful event, this thing that I've been working on for 10 years about this community in Shreveport, also called The Bottoms, you know, through art, through a sort of positive, creative endeavor, you're bringing people together in a way that, look, at that same event, you had cops there, you had Pueblos there, you had guys performing that had never performed before, and everybody did great. I think there's something about these kind of creative endeavors that brings folks together.
Yeah, I mean, it was bitching, but, and then again, too, John, I mean, I'm not gonna, if you tell me somebody's a good guy, I mean, I know you long enough that you're not gonna be fucking with some jackass,
yeah, yeah.
And some fucking, just some mouthpiece, you know? I know there's some coppers that, man, here comes that motherfucker again, you know? And it's just, and some of the coppers I couldn't even stand. But then some of the gangsters out there, too, and they would just, you know, want to give you a hard time. But as you get older, you mature, and you're like, fuck all this shit, dude. I just want to have a good time. I'm going to enjoy everybody's company. And we're just going to talk, man. So, I mean, we talked, and shit, we've talked about fucking going fishing and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah,
man,
I want to talk about that.
So, yeah, man. You know,
and that's the thing. And me and Jerry talked, and we talked about where our mind state is now, John. And we know, like me, I know from my neighborhood, sometimes I got to be an example to a point to where everybody's not going to agree with it. And I say that to say there was this thing going on where they had the ambassador thing going. I forgot to do that Solar Dad thing. It was something they called where
the sunburst yeah, or star yeah, so, or some yeah, shit
so,
like
so
that.
Anyway, so what it was where they gave us jobs. So we did this thing where they try to make it where your working hours was in the neighborhood. And so when it's stuff like people double parked and all that shit like that, and you know, the music up loud and all that shit like that, the officers are coming to you and say, hey, Bo. You know, man, come on, man. These dudes can't be blocking all the traffic right here, man, you know. So instead of them just coming out and blazing and, you know, and we worked with that, man. And that shit was kind of cool. Like, it's a couple of police officers I kind of respect out of that, you know what I'm saying? You know, and then in that, you know, that one officer, you know, he want to exchange numbers. Look, man, look. I still respect the code.
I can't do it.
Yeah, you know, you're an active officer. And I'm not finna I'm not finna exchange numbers with you, you know.
Yes.
Yeah,
let's take our baby step.
Yeah. And also too, Jerry, man, look, and it was a wonderful thing what you did, man, opening up your doors to get in there, because like John say, man, we had guys that never ever did that before and was so fired up and anxious and when we completed it and finished, and the love and respect that we got from the people was there, man, you know, that, you know, we was really scrambling to try to find a spot, and that was during the pandemic and shit, man.
Yeah.
And you opened your doors, and that right there made me respect you a lot, man, you know. And then after talking to you, you know what I'm saying, it's just a whole nother different level, man. So you got a lot of love and respect.
Yeah, boy, I mean, I appreciate you, bro. And, you know, like I said, dude, it's just we're two fucking grown men, dude.
Yeah.
And all that bullshit is aside. And like I said, man, it was a job, and you did your job, and your job was not get caught. My job was to catch you, you know. But we never crossed paths that I can fucking remember, man.
What do you like about fishing? What does it mean to you, man?
Oh, man, it's just fucking. I'm out there in the boat, out in nature, doing shit that my dad, my uncles used to take me when we were little, and I was gonna take a break from work. I was gonna take a leave of absence because I had qualified to go back east. And do tournament fishing.
Damn.
And so I was trying to make that decision, and I'm like, man, that's going to be a tough road. You know, it's a big decision. I got family. I'm like, man, I can't do it. So I still fish competitively around here and stuff like that. And I love doing it, man. I just love going traveling. I've been to Washington, Oregon, Texas, Arkansas. Fuck, I've been everywhere fishing.
And how about you, man?
Man, you know, because John, I didn't do a lot of fishing and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, you now, as you get older in your age, you got this bucket list, man. So one of the things that I want to do is know how to fish so I can mess with my grandkids even my kids and, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And get to really know what I'm talking about. You know, and I'm not sitting there, you know, just waiting. Because I know that if you can show them different things, man, they'll really appreciate it and respect it through life. You know what I'm saying? And then it can go somewhere. You know, you don't know where, but it can go somewhere. You know
what I'm saying? I mean, next time we get together, we got to do it in a boat then. Hey, guys, I can't thank you. Now, honestly, we could talk about that. We got to restaurant run. Right. I love both of y'all. I appreciate it. Thanks for being here, everybody. I really appreciate it. If you dug what you saw and you want to hear more, subscribe, like, do all that stuff. It'd mean a lot to us. I hope you dig these episodes as much as we dig doing them. You guys take care of yourself.